This year our theme at West is Step Out of the Boat, where we're going to practice together taking small, risky steps of trust, putting into practice what we've learnt over many years for some of us, getting some practical sort of field education from God to go along with the kind of book learning and talking learning that we do. And this series that we're in the middle of is called Out of the Boat People, because it's about a bunch of guys thousands of years ago and thousands of kilometres away who were experts at stepping out of the boat, at doing and saying really risky things because God asked them to, and we're going to let them inspire us. So today, if you have a Bible with you, you can open it to the book of Micah, who is one of our out-of-the-boat guys, because a bunch of these guys, thousands of years ago, said and did such mind-blowing stuff and said things in such memorable and poetic language that it got written down and it got collected together in little books, and it has ended up in our Bibles, the Old Testament prophets. So that's what we'll be looking at today, the book of Micah. Now, Micah may or may not be the sort of shabbiest part of your Bible that you open most often. Might not be. That might be the Psalms or the Gospels. So you might need to use the contents page to have a little look. But if you're one of the 50-odd people who have looked at our church blog this week, the post on Micah, then maybe you know exactly where it is. But because it's maybe not the most familiar part of the Bible, a little bit of an overview for us. Micah was actually one of the most famous and most successful Old Testament prophets in all of Israel. Will I say Israel? But he wasn't technically in Israel. Does anyone know what I'm getting at? Why is he sort of part of Israel but part of not Israel? He was in Judah. So Israel, God's special country that knew God better than anyone else in the whole world at that time, Israel had been squabbling. They had separated into two kingdoms, called, confusingly, Judah and Israel. That's a little confusing. And the Old Testament prophets often speak of Israel to mean the whole thing, even though they were separated, because they are looking forward to the day when God is going to reunite the country. But Micah was from Judah, that part of the kingdom. And the stuff that he said is over sort of a couple of decades, two or three decades of speeches that have been collected together into one book. So as you read the book of Micah, it might seem a bit disjointed, and that's because it is. There's a whole lot of different speeches and sermons that he gave in Judah on a whole lot of different occasions, but all in the same kind of context, which we'll get to in a minute. Now, one thing that's true about stepping out of the boat is that you've got to know what's happening with the weather, right? Weather's a bit surprising. Today, it's raining, it's pouring, and it was supposed to be sunny as far as I was concerned, because it's January and it's supposed to be sunny all the time. But I'm not going to complain too much, because we know that friends just across the Tasman are experiencing rain of completely different proportions, aren't they? And I don't know about you, you might have been as distressed as I have been to see that our friends in Australia have been dealing with this amazing damage and distress brought by these floods. And thinking about the flooding in Queensland has got me thinking this week about what the job of the prophets was in the Old Testament. Because the job of the prophets is to interpret crisis for the people around them. The crisis might be flooding, it might be war, but if something terrible is happening, it's the job of the prophets to address it and explain it and put it into some context and give a message from God about it. And it occurred to me today that when we think about what's happening in Queensland, that we can analyse the crisis in Queensland on three levels. And that's also, I think, what the Old Testament prophets did. We can look at the local level, on the ground, what's going on, what is being experienced by the people right now. Then we can take a step back and take a broader view of the national scene, what's going on more broadly that explains what people are experiencing. And we can take one further step back and look at the global perspective, what does the whole world's perspective tell us about what's happening in this crisis? So, in Queensland, we can say, locally, what's happening? What are people experiencing? Well, it's raining. So if we're trying to explain the Queensland flooding, if you are standing on the main street of Rockhampton in Queensland, what are you seeing? It's raining. A lot of rain. 200 millimetres, 8 or 9 inches of rain in December alone. And that flooded 70 towns. 200,000 people were affected by the flooding. Still are. 9 state highways were closed. This is what you're observing on the ground. The rain caused the rivers to rise and flood this vast area. But why is it raining so much? And if we take a step back and look at a sort of national perspective, we can see that Australia, as a nation, had a sort of rocky relationship with tropical cyclone Tasha in December. And it was tropical cyclone Tasha that brought this amazing rain that was unexpected and unprecedented and caused the river levels to rise. But it's still pretty unusual because they see tropical cyclones all the time. Why is it so bad? And if we take one step back and look at the global perspective, we see that tropical cyclone Tasha coincided with the global weather pattern of La Nina. And they join forces with the overall climate change around the world, global warming. And you put those three things together, cyclone Tasha, La Nina, global warming, you get catastrophe. We're going to do the same thing this morning with Micah, because I think that he approaches the crisis he is experiencing on these same three levels. We see in Micah descriptions of the local, what's going on the ground, of the national, what's going on in the context of the national relationship with God, and the international, how that fits in the big, big picture of God's plan for our world. The crisis that Micah is addressing isn't flooding, it's war. Because he is living for his whole lifetime in a period that saw the rise of the Assyrian Empire, who took over the Middle East by punch and kick and sword thrust. Now, Micah came from a town called Moresheth, which is a border town in Judah. So he had a particularly international perspective of things, but you didn't need to be living in Moresheth to understand that there was a real threat on the horizon. That every other country around the region, Syria, Israel, even their neighbours, had been attacked and taken over by Assyria. They'd come in, crushed the population, hauled them off into exile, and who knows, but Judah might be next. And so Micah's job is to explain this crisis on these three levels. Locally, what is he observing? What are people experiencing on the ground in Judah? Nationally, and this is really significant for our reading of the Old Testament, nationally, how does that behaviour that he's observing fit into the context of the special national relationship that God has with his country, unlike the relationship with anybody else? And then, and this is crucial for us who don't live in Israel, how does all of that fit into God's big, big picture, God's plan for our whole world? And I think that seeing the prophets on these three levels will help us figure out how to bridge the gap between some crazy old guys 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 years ago, thousands of kilometres away, and our lives here in Taranaki. So we're going to start with Micah chapter 6, that Geraldine read so beautifully. Thank you, Geraldine. And we're going to look at the local, national and international perspective that Micah brings to the crisis he's observing. I'm going to begin by reading again the first 5 verses. And I want you to be asking yourself as I read them whether this chunk of chapter 6 is talking about local, national or international perspectives. All right? From the Good News Translation, this Bible was given to me by my parents when I turned 6. Listen to the Lord's case against Israel. Arise, O Lord, and present your case. Let the mountains and the hills hear what you say. You mountains, you everlasting foundations of the earth, listen to the Lord's case. The Lord has a case to bring against his people. He is going to bring an accusation against Israel. The Lord says, "My people, what have I done to you? How have I been a burden to you? Answer me. I brought you out of Egypt. I rescued you from slavery. I sent Moses and Aaron and Miriam to lead you. My people, remember what King Balak of Moab planned to do to you and how Balaam, son of Beor, answered him. Remember the things that happened on the way from the camp at Acacia to Gilgal. Remember these things. And do you all realize what I did in order to save you? Is Micah here bringing a local, a national, or an international perspective to the crisis he sees? National, right? This is about the relationship that God has with Israel, about the special relationship. You know, God and Israel, they go way back. God brought them out of slavery. He provided leadership for them. He helped them out along the way. And God expects more of Israel than of her neighbors because they know God better. But how are they living? The rest of chapter 6 describes the local situation. What's going on in Judah? What is Micah observing? Well, lying and cheating and stealing and meanness and nastiness and horribleness and violence. That's what he's observing. These people who have the privilege of this amazingly close relationship with the Almighty God of the universe are behaving like a pack of animals. It's disappointing. And Micah's job as a prophet to Israel, interpreting the crisis, is to kind of act, one, as a postie, giving God's message to God's people, acting like a postie, and then secondly, acting like a policeman, reminding God's people of what they already know, about what's expected of them, about their obligations, how they're supposed to be behaving. So as a postie and a policeman, we see Micah talking about the behaviour on the ground, the local behaviour, and then reminding God's people what they already know about their obligations because of the national character of Israel and Judah. And what does God expect from these people who have the privilege of this special relationship? These famous words in verse 8. And if before this week you knew anything from Micah, it was probably this. The Lord has told us what is good. What he requires of us is this: to do what is just, to show constant love, and to live in humble fellowship with our God. Sadly, verses 9 to 12 describe how this is not how the people in Micah's country are behaving. The whole lying, cheating, stealing, violence business. And then verses 13 to 16 follow on, and they draw back to the national perspective again and speak about the punishment that God is going to be giving to Judah because of their national relationship and what is expected. Because they've broken their contract. This is the imagery that Micah uses as a postie bringing God's message to God's people. They have a legal obligation, a two-way contract with the God of the universe, and they've broken it. And so God's taking them to court to accuse them. They're defaulting on their contract. Now, before we look at an example of the global context, taking this international perspective that Micah puts the crisis in, it might be worth asking, as James did on the blog this week, how is it that we can tell from all of this interesting stuff we read in Micah what stuff is stuff that's happening right then, back then, and what's yet to be fulfilled about the future? How can we sort out how things are relevant to us, right? Well, the primary job of the prophet, remember, is to interpret a crisis for the people. The primary job of a prophet is not to predict the distant future, but to make sense of the present. And Micah's words were only written down and seen as so important and recognised because they made some sense to the original hearers. But it's still in our Bible for a good reason, even though it's a conversation between two parties with a contract that we're not part of. And as we look at Micah on the local, the national and the global levels, we can sort of see how things can be relevant and bridge the gap between them and us. Because we are not in a legal contract with God in the same way that Israel was, are we? They had a special relationship. Things have changed. But we are still in a relationship with the God of the universe, the same mighty God of the universe, through Jesus Christ, who extended the contract, brought a new covenant to cover everyone, anyone around the world who wants to be part of God's big plan, now can. So we're part of a relationship with the same God of the universe that is speaking through Micah here, aren't we? So that's got to be useful to know. And we read in verse 8 what the Lord requires of us, and I think we can agree that things haven't changed that much. Do what is just. Show constant love. Do these things sound like things that Jesus would approve of? Pretty relevant to us, right? Justice and kindness, just as needed in our world as they were in Judah in the time of Micah. Justice and kindness is what God asks of us. So kids, be nice to your little sister. Be friends with the kid at school who doesn't have any friends. Be honest with your money. Don't rip people off. Spend some time with the older gentleman next door who lives alone. Speak up for the underdog. Be a voice for the voiceless. And indeed, these words from Micah 8 have been taken by an international movement of Christians right now who are working and advocating for the end of global poverty in our world. So they're completely relevant for us today. We've talked quite a bit at West over the years about the Micah Challenge, this international movement, and how the Baptist Aid arm, Bands Aid, there's a poster at the back by the door on Bands Aid if you're interested, are partnering with the Micah Challenge. And if anyone's interested in how Micah's words have echoed down the centuries and millennia to influence Christians for justice today, head to our website and follow some links to read a bit more about the Micah Challenge. The local and the national focus of the prophets, the local focus, how people are behaving, the national focus, what God thinks of that in the context of God's relationship with Israel. Those two levels of the prophets invite us to ask, as James did on the blog actually, what would Micah say to us today? If Micah was God's postie to Aotearoa, to New Plymouth, to Taranaki, what message do you think Micah would be bringing to us?
Well done, good and faithful servants.
Oh, that's nice to hear. Well done, good and faithful servants. Chapter 6 speaks of false gods. What do you think our false gods might be that Micah might want to point out? What kinds of injustice are we involved in that cheat the poor? Or in what ways might God want to look down and say, this is awesome, you're totally living up to our special relationship. Keep up the good work, good and faithful servant. Well, these are questions for us to ponder through the week, and we might want to converse about them in two ways, I'd suggest. Perhaps on the blog where James has posed these questions, you might like to give your suggestions of what you think Micah the postie might say to us today. And perhaps at morning tea, when you get to know some new friends and see some old friends after the holidays, maybe you could chat about what you think Micah would say to us today about justice and kindness in our world. I'd like to finish with some global, big picture words, because we haven't looked at the global perspective from Micah yet. from chapter 4. So we're skipping back a page. The opening verses, 1 to 4, which I'll read in a moment, they pull back to show how people's lying, cheating, unjust, violent behaviour and God's response to it fit in with God's overall big, big picture for the world, God's big plan for our universe. And the big plan for Israel and for Judah and for New Plymouth and for Queensland and for Sudan and Afghanistan and Burma, God's big plan for us is this. It's intended a bit like Martin Luther King's famous I Have a Dream speech, to paint a hopeful and amazing picture of the future. Not just to make us feel better, but to make us act better. So as I close by reading some words from Micah chapter 4, let's let them inspire us to act with justice and kindness in these coming days and weeks, to be part of God's big plan for our universe. In days to come, the mountain where the temple stands will be the highest one of all, towering above all the hills. Many nations will come streaming to it, and their people will say, "Let us go up the hill of the Lord to the temple of Israel's God, for he will teach us what he wants us to do. We will walk in the paths he has chosen." For the Lord's teaching comes from Jerusalem. From Zion he speaks to his people. He will settle disputes among the nations, among the great powers near and far. They will hammer their swords into ploughs and their spears into pruning knives. Nations will never again go to war, never prepare for battle again. Everyone will live in peace among his own vineyards and fig trees. And no one will make him afraid. The Lord Almighty has promised this. May it be so in our lives.